When I say the words sensory integration, what do you think about? A mommy contacted me and she was very worried. And she said, Ilana, you have to do a podcast around sensory children. And I said, but what about them? And she said, we don't fit in. Today we're talking sensory integration, diagnosis, symptoms, just everything to make sure that our moms and our dads and our children feel supported. I'm Ilana, and this is another Baby Brunch podcast. And a big thank you to our support. Curaprox aims to create 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. Curaprox Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life. This podcast is supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. The range of Epimax Baby and Junior Gentle All-Purpose Emollient Moisturizers is an all-day, everyday favorite for babies and children. Give your child a good start to every day by nourishing and protecting their skin with Epimax. Now in studio, we have Megan Polkovitz. She's an occupational therapist. And when I read that she is trained in sensory integration, I was like, ha, we have found our match. What's lovely about your biography is it says that your special interests vary from pediatric conditions, including developmental delays, sensory integration difficulties, Down syndrome, autism spectrum disorder, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder, behavioral difficulties, and then also visual perpetual difficulties. But first, we have to welcome you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
When one of my little ones had to go and see the OT, we called a family meeting. Because at the time, to say to someone that your child needs to see an occupational therapist was extremely overwhelming. What does the OT do?
So occupational therapists pretty much look at a child holistically. We look at what areas of function they're struggling with. We look at those weaknesses as well as their strengths, and we try to help improve their daily function.
So when I see my OT, are things going to get better or will they just grow out of it?
Definitely will get better. So we're looking at the underlying areas that are affecting a child's function, whether it's dressing, grooming, bathing, as well as school-based things that are going on, behavioral things, emotional things. And then once we identify what those areas are, we're able to actually start treating those areas, give a lot of input at home and to the other caregivers to help consolidate this child and improve their general functioning.
Sensory integration, what are we looking for?
So, I mean, sensory integration, the official term, the very, PC way of saying it, is basically the brain's ability to organize and process sensory information coming from the environment as well as the body, and then to respond appropriately. So what does this mean? This basically means that a child is getting all kinds of input coming from the environment and their body in terms of sight, smell, touch, taste. There's two other ones that people don't really know about, so we can get into those if you'd like. And the idea is, how are they processing it? Is it causing big reactions, behavioral, tantrums, things like that? Is it causing avoiding behavior, kids that don't play with messy items? Is it causing irritability? So 9 out of 10 times you're going to have an emotional response, and that is heavily linked to sensory. You can also have issues with discrimination, which is looking at, can they discriminate between moving forward, moving sideways, moving in a circle, and does that cause dizziness? Are we car sick? All of those kind of things come into play.
So the sensory child, what do they look like?
Oof. That is a broad question, because you have different categories. You have a sensitive child, a sensitive sensory child. They struggle with labels on their clothing. They struggle with messy play. They struggle with different food textures. They're your picky eater. They don't like to climb and explore. You have the seeking child who jumps from the rooftops. They are climbing, they are swinging, they are touching and poking their friend next to them. They are messing with the stationery. So we have those. Then we have under-responsive kids. So those are, we call our tortoises. They're slow. They take a long time to pack their bag or get ready in the morning. They don't take instructions on too well. They seem lethargic all the time. So a sensory kid is, you can't put it into a neat little box. It is vast. So what we find is when a parent comes to us with, my child is, we're struggling with A, B, and C, their emotions or their behavior or their exploration, new environments, things like that, then we dig deeper and we see which systems are not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
You just described all four of my kids.
So we all have sensory things. That's important for you to know. Every single person is either a combination of them, one or the other. For me, for example, I'm a very sensitive sensory system. I struggle. I will not go on a roller coaster. I will not go very nicely in a glass lift. Escalators freak me out. I'm a picky eater. All of those things, which, you know, this knowledge wasn't around when I was a child, so I wasn't treated. So I've had to just learn to cope, even though I get very overloaded and I struggle. But as long as a child is functional, we don't touch it. We don't have to do anything about it. When a child is dysfunctional in one way or another, that's where we come in.
Who's the first point of contact that normally notices that a child needs to go and see the OT? Is it the teacher? Do you leave it up to your mother-in-law? Is it something that us as parents can identify and then go, okay, we need to go and see an OT?
So parents can definitely identify. Usually the teacher does, because they spend the most amount of time with the teacher. And the demands are really increased. So a classroom is a sensory-rich environment. It's not just one-on-one having a chat. There's background noise. This kid is throwing that. Color. That one's screaming. Color, shapes, everything is in the environment. So that is where the kids are pushed to their limits. And they have to hold it together the whole day. And when they come home, they fall apart. And that's usually where parents are seeing, but my child is tantruming at home. Mm-hmm. My child is emotional at home. They're aggressive. They're destructive.
They're naughty.
They're naughty, but they're not naughty. Mm-hmm. They can't cope with what's happening within their day. And it's all loading and loading and loading until eventually they explode. So parents can definitely identify if they know what they're looking for.
The child that is, let's call it, stimulated at school and they're having a lot of fun, that comes home, that does fall apart. Mm. I'm still saying, so what? At which point do we seek help? Isn't it natural for you to let your hair down when you get home because you've just had a really full day? I mean, we do that when we get home. You want 5 minutes to just take it, you know, as a parent. Mm. You've just been at work, you get home. I normally do it in the car before I drive through the driveway because I know the minute I open the driveway gate and make my way into the house, I'm going to have little people run to the car. And then there's no time to debrief my brain. So mine is in front of the gate. Why is it seen as something that needs an aid, a band-aid, or a fix if we need to let our hair down? Is there a line in the sand that it just is too much? And how do we know too much is too much?
So I think it's very subjective for each family. But a lot of the parents, what they note is that a child comes home and they don't just fall apart. Falling apart's okay. You've had a bad day. You've had a long day. There's nothing wrong with that. You kiss your baby. You hug them tight. There's no issue with that whatsoever. The problem comes in when they're being triggered by the smallest thing and they're having tantrums that are not being able to be consoled. Mm-hmm. They're not slowing down. They're not calming down no matter what the parents are doing. It also then loads onto things like not being able to sleep that night. Mm-hmm. So now we're not either going to sleep or we're going to sleep, but we're not staying asleep. And then we've got a miserable, really unhappy little person where it shouldn't be the case. So for 9 out of 10 times, it's when the parent is no longer coping. They don't know what to do. They have tried everything to either get this baby to have a good night's sleep, to get them to understand that things happen and it's okay, we can move past it. Or they're worried about their child's safety. For example, self-harming. A child can bang things, hit their head on things because they get into such an overwhelmed state that they aren't actually then able to regulate or adjust and come down, which is what we want them to be.
I'm going to name a few things that some of the moms have sent me.
Sure.
Okay. We want to avoid touch, so the child doesn't like touching. The other one says we dislike hugs, all right? Then this one craves strong, firm hugs. The other one says, what about sound? my child is jumping and spinning. When is a meltdown too much? So all of these talk about behavior. So give me an overall, give me an umbrella. If I had to come to you as a mum and I have a little one and I say, okay, I think we are sensory. Which areas are we looking at?
When a little one comes to us, the sensory systems that we're looking at, there's the five conventional ones, sight, smell, touch, taste, and hearing. And then there's two extra ones that people don't really know about. There's vestibular. So it looks at the position of the head. It looks into movement, balance, and spatial awareness. And then there's proprioception. Proprioception is pretty much resistive pressure. So my best example for that is you've had a really long day. You come home, you hug someone you love, and you squeeze as tight as you can. Your whole body goes, ah. That's proprioception. It's the body awareness of where you are in space, but it's also the joints and the muscles. So those are our main areas that we look into. And we see, is a child over-responsive, under-responsive, or just right in each area?
What does over-responsive look like?
Over-responsive in each area. Over-responsive in each area looks like vestibular. We've got our movement seekers. They are climbing on your windows.
Climbing on the jungle gym and saying, Mommy, look. And then they jump.
No, that's pretty normal. That's normal. Relatively
my
okay.
Nerves.
That's pretty normal. I'm talking about the children who climb onto your windowsill and dive bomb the couch.
Okay.
So we're looking at higher, extreme. That's the seekers. In terms of proprioception, our seekers, we're looking at children that are, they are bulldozing other children. They are pushing them. They are bumping them. They want to rough house as much as possible. Yes. So those are the probe ones. The seekers for visual, they're constantly distracted by what's in the room. They are looking all around at what's happening. The auditory seekers are the ones who love to hum, sing, make noise. They love to scream as much as they can. They want bigger, better, more. In terms of taste, so then we've got our seekers in terms of they are our foodies. They will try anything. They are happy to try sushi for the first time if they've never had it before. And in terms of our olfactory, so our smelling, that's a little bit of a hairy one because they tend to sniff everything before they eat it.
Right.
They also smell non-food objects,
okay. So
which is not as appropriate as we want it to be. Mm. So those are our seekers in all the areas.
Yet I ask. But I hear you. I hear you. I mean, kids are just so, isn't it amazing? I mean, you see in your practice, they're just so unique and wonderful that even the ones that wants to bulldoze, you know, and depending on where we play dates, I do get to the house where there's the rough play. And then in my house, it sounds like a busy orchestra, you know, because there's too many instruments and everyone's holding their ears. So, I mean, too loud, too hard. Too smelly. I think we can find it in different scenarios.
And now for a message from Calpol. Calpol Pediatric Suspension begins reducing fever within 15 minutes. Its fast-acting formulation helps lower body temperature promptly and contains paracetamol, which is widely recommended for children's pain and fever management. Calpol is formulated to be gentle on the stomach and is indicated for mild to moderate pain and fever. Calpol is the number one selling children's pain reliever in South Africa. Alcohol-free and available in 50 ml and 100 ml sizes. Calpol is suitable for home and travel use.
How do we start fixing what we think is the problem?
First thing you do is an assessment. You come to an occupational therapist, we do a full holistic assessment. So we're not just looking into sensory, we're also looking into scholastic concepts, fine motor, gross motor, visual perception. We want to know overall, is the child coping? Because just because they're struggling with textures doesn't necessarily mean they don't have a fine motor issue. We want to look at all the areas that are affecting this child's life, even if it's not manifesting yet. If we're going to treat sensory, for example, but we've picked up issues in gross motor, we're not just going to leave the gross motor because it's not causing a problem in their daily life. We're going to treat everything because we want them to reach their potential. We want them to do the best that they can.
So there's a sensory solution for babies, toddlers,
definitely.
Tweens.
Definitely.
Into our teens and then yeah. even for adults.
Yeah. So it's not always the case that they'll have to go into rigorous therapy. Mm. I mean, we do once a week therapy. We have to give them enough time to internalize what we're teaching. But some of the time, it's just home programs for mom and dad. It's explaining to them how to see the signs, what to do, how to adjust behavior. Because when they're little, they don't know what they need yet. So mom and dad need to come in and be able to provide that sensory input to either calm them down or speed them up. It depends right. where they're at. We kind of just want to be in this just right phase, this middle ground. So we teach the parents, which is a huge role. They need to be us when we're not there. We only see them once a week. So we need it to continue. So education for parents, for caregivers, for teachers, huge Wonderful. Role.
Yeah. Why could this be disruptive for the classroom? Why could my sensory baby, child, teen, tween, be disruptive for the classroom?
So very often they're struggling to just remain in a calm and alert state. That's what we want them to be in for learning, for taking in information. They're all over the place. They're bouncing around. And the problem is they're distracting other children. So either by movement, by their noises, by touching, fiddling. And the issue is they then get labeled as naughty or disruptive or even ADD or whatever it is, when it's actually, it can be addressed. It can be remediated in one way or another. And we help them to slow down and to be able to cope within these settings, because it's not a choice. You have to go to school. You have to cope in school.
I'm the mom.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask the OT some questions. They will grow out of it.
Not necessarily.
Why are we the problem in the class? I think it's the teacher.
It's not the child's fault. This is the way that they were born, and it can definitely be remediated. So why would you let them struggle when you could help them?
Is this hereditary? It's my mother's fault.
There's an element of hereditary. It, as I said, everybody's got sensory issues here, there, and everywhere. So a lot of it does come down from the parents.
You experts just want to make money out of us. That's why you all exist, because we must avoid touch. Then there's those that dislike hugs. Then there's those that like hugs. Then we mustn't hug at all. We don't know what to do anymore.
We're definitely not trying to just make a quick buck off your baby. We want the best for them. We want to help them reach their potential. And more than anything is we want them functional. We want them to be able to enjoy hugs. We're not saying take away hugs and never hug them again. We're saying let's fix the issue so that they can be loving and nurturing towards their family members.
As a mom, I'm not winning. I'm giving up because this is too hard.
It is. It is very challenging, but that's what we're here for. Like I said, we are here to support the family and the child. We're there to make sure that this little one's life is as amazing as it can be. And that includes the family. It includes the teachers. If they're in other therapies, everyone has a role to play.
The child's looking for attention.
A lot of the time they are. That's age appropriate sometimes.
Yeah.
It very well could be, but that's our job to figure out what is behavior, what is sensory, what is age appropriate, what is they picked it up from their friend in class.
Mm-hmm.
All of that can be age appropriate.
I love the picking up from the friend at class. Yeah. A quick story. So the one friend had a brace around the foot. The next week I had two children whose feet were all sore, who needed a brace. Uh-huh. I was like, listen, yeah. There is nothing wrong with your foot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They pick up from their peers a lot. So
what's the correlation between sensory children, ADD and ADHD?
It's often coexists. Okay. So sensory is neurodevelopmental. ADD is neuropsychiatric.
Okay.
ADD is chemicals.
Okay.
So what happens is it often runs together. Our role, okay, is never to diagnose an ADD or something along those lines. We're there to fix the sensory as much as we can and see, is there still a concentration, impulsivity still going on, and then refer to the correct professional.
How can parents help you? As the OT, you know, we come and we are dedicated, we're motivated. But when you go home, you're emotional.
Hard.
You lose motivation. And, you know, as a working mom, I need to take care of a lot of stuff. I actually had this discussion this morning, if I can unpack and just moan a bit, because I love moaning sometimes. Before 9 o'clock this morning, when my job started, I'd already made dinner. I had washed ballet outfits. I got the girls ready. There was a school drop that had happened. I had a full day before I started my job, you know? So now I still need to go home and do what?
So what we do is we try to make it as easy of a transition as possible. So we offer all options in terms of extra homework that you can be doing at home. But in essence, it's what a parent can cope with. So we give online notes. So a parent that can't sit in a session knows exactly what we did in that lesson. And there's videos that are uploaded as well of exercises they can do with them. We also give homework books where there's a little bit of coloring or drawing, working on those other scholastic based areas that we want them to be able to do. And that's not hard to say to your little one, this is what you need to do here, get on with it. Mm-hmm. And give them a bit of that independence to be able to do their own stuff.
In the time where there's apps for everything, I mean, depending on where you land on, your social media and Instagram algorithm will just take you there. Surely we can just go online.
You can. You definitely can go online and research. Dr. Google, you know, can be harmful
at times. As you said that, I got so scared.
Yeah.
Okay.
It can be harmful at times. But the problem is that each child is different. Even if you have five children, every single one of those children has a different profile. And without delving into what they specifically need for that specific child, you're not going to get as far as you want to. You're not necessarily going to be able to tweak the areas that will help that child excel. And that's what we want.
I went to a parent-teacher meeting the other day, and one of the things they spoke about in older children is moving in their seat. Do we see that as an issue, or do they need to go and see an OT? When children are moving in their seat, they need to do exams. Do they need a squish ball? Do they need a rubber band around their chair? You know, what's your solution?
So restlessness in the chair is greater than just the moving in the chair. Number one, they're distracting other kids. Number two, they're exerting so much energy by constantly moving. They're tired. And when they're tired, you see the child who's slumped over the table, leaning on their non-dominant arm. They're squashing their diaphragm. They're not taking in enough oxygen. They're tired. They're not going to follow instructions. They're not going to complete tasks. So yes, we do need to see an OT, because later on in life, they have exams. They have to be able to concentrate for prolonged periods of time. And again, you're going to have that child being questioned on their concentration where that's not necessarily the case.
Quick fire. My child is mouthing non-food objects, chewing their T-shirt, fingers, objects. OT or not?
OT.
Child is busy, restless, won't sit still in class when teacher speaks to them.
OT.
My child won't listen. Wait. So I once took my child. I actually met the lady the other day. It was World Hearing Day.
Yeah.
She was about six, and I took her to an audiologist. We came back. They said, there's nothing wrong with her ears. And the other day, this child now in question, she's now 10. And I saw the lady. I was like, hey, I saw you many years ago. She said, how's your child's ears? I said, fine, still not listening. So won't listen or follow instructions.
Yes, OT.
Doesn't like new environments, new people.
Definitely OT. Mm.
Child is rough, bumps and falls over, often falls.
OT, I think you know the answer to this.
I laugh because, again, we have this in my family. So a mom has it, so all the children have it, you know. They say it's hereditary, the bumping.
Clumsiness.
Yes, clumsiness. It isn't.
I mean, there's no set research, but we see a lot of what the child is exhibiting coming through from the parents, one or both.
Child is distracted in the classroom.
Definitely. OT.
OT.
You want to rule out whether it's other things other than just concentration.
You're going to have to tell me about your practice now, because I see that you are helping so many families and so many people.
So our practice is based in Parkview, right near Zoo Lake. We have a nice huge space downstairs and a nice huge space upstairs. We've got quite a few therapists that work in my practice, so I'm one of five. We take little people. Little people are our game. We absolutely adore them. So for us, anywhere from, I think our youngest is about 4 months old and our oldest is about 15, all with varying difficulties. And the best part is that we play. The whole time we play. And they have no idea that they're working hard. So they want to come back every week and they want to work hard for us and impress us. We like to give them stickers and then a prize when they get 10 stickers. That's like their favorite thing.
Little incentives.
Yeah, little incentives. But what we do is we support little people. We support their families. We help for them to thrive. We are always looking 5 years down the line. And I think that's what's most important is that, okay, your child can't sit right now, but what's it going to look like in 5 years? We want to make sure that they're going to thrive. They will never have to come back to OT. That is the plan. Doesn't always work, isn't always the case. Some kids need top-ups, but for the most part, we want them to reach their full potential.
What's the best part of being an OT?
There's so many. I would say seeing the progress for me personally. I mean, the little hugs, the little hands, the little people, the little laughs, but the progress for me is more than anything because I thrive on that. I know that they are going to have better lives and that's important to me.
Thanks for what you're doing to so many and for so many people.
It's my honor. It's what I was meant to do.
This podcast was supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. Epimax Baby and Junior is dermatologist approved, free of artificial colorants and fragrances, and is safe to use from birth. Touch, nourish, love your child's skin with Epimax Baby and Junior. Available from leading pharmacies and retail stores. Curaprox aims to create 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. Curaprox Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life.